obvious ones, obviously just to sort of pull a lot of people in. But over the last 5 years, since you released the Drill EP, you've done obviously the two albums now, you've got OK Computer. How would you sort of sum up that period, the last 5 years?
In some ways, it actually feels that we're only really starting in some ways. I know it sounds odd 5 years down the line, considering how many gigs we've done, but there's something about releasing this album which I think it's just a really good representation of us. I think it's the closest we've come to feeling confident about what we do. The way we approached it was to produce it on our own. And that gave us, the responsibility came full circle back onto us. I think it's just been this time of gradually building things up, and now it just feels that there's this awareness of us around in a lot of places now. And we're just quite excited to see how this album's actually received now.
Because there's been quite a gap between, obviously, Pablo and Rather Bins and
But the funny thing is, looking at each stage, it's what's an album supposed to do? An album's supposed to capture. It's like a musical photo of the band at a certain stage. And the thing about going back to the Drill EP and everything is that it has. And at times when we listen to Pablo Honey, when we recorded it, there were things that we weren't happy about. But the things that we weren't happy about really are our own playing, and we progressed as a band, through 12 years of playing, because we started this band in 85 at school. So if you learn your instruments as a trade, the only way you can actually get better is by going out and doing loads and loads and loads of gigs. Mm. And the Drill EP represents us at a certain time. Pablo Honey sounds, that Creeps recorded over 5 years ago. And it's kind of, it's pretty naive, and it's still great, but the great thing about anything that we've done, and also if you like all the B-sides, and what we hope is in the future is to bring out a B-sides album.
Please.
Yeah, and we're really proud of those, because they're definitely, they fill in the chunks of time in between doing the bulk of the album. So you see the progression on that. So I think it's really interesting, and this album, like Phil says, represents us now. And we got to stage last October, this is like 96, and we did the first session for OK Computer. And we were playing like we've never played before, and it was really, really bizarre. Doing takes, going in and listening to it, and going, Jesus Christ, was that us? And it was really, really, it's an amazing feeling, because it's like 12 years you've been leading up to this. And floundering, and sometimes you have your on days, some days you have your off days before, but there was like a lot more consistency, and it wasn't kind of like an understanding like you do this, I'll do that kind of thing. It's much more because it's just literally through playing, having the luxury of being together as a band for 12 years, which I don't think can be underestimated. It's so important. We're very...
The marriage seems to have sort of, well, you've settled in the sense that you're perfectly in tune with what each of you are doing and how you do it, I'm sure.
Yeah, but like any good relationship, you don't take one another for granted.
No.
And that's, we've been through, and there'll be plenty more. We've been through emotional problems and infighting and stuff like that. But we've always kind of sorted it out, and it'll carry on. But there's always a belief, like, if there's a next big one, it won't be all over. There's kind of, but who knows, it could be like that. That's the other thing, is that you never know.
Mm-hmm. That's what keeps it exciting.
As I say, what was interesting is that, the rehearsals for OK Computer started last year already, in February. That's why such a long time. I know you're very sort of, I wouldn't call it precious,
but the songs have to evolve.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
I've got like 20 cassettes from Morgan, always took in a Walkman to the, and recorded usually the bulk of a session. And you see how it's brilliant to listen to. Boring probably for anyone else, apart from a hardcore Radiohead fan. But it's like, it's really interesting, because you get a song like No Surprises, how it started. And you forget all those things as well. And it's and I've got the same for the Bends as well. I've got the Bends sessions, how that started, and those songs, and it was, you know, it's really interesting because tempos change, lyrics change, and, you know, 2 weeks later things change.
It's also a lot we had to learn as well last year.
It's true.
As you say, you know, coming back to this whole thing, evolution of the song, but the way we, you know, coming back to this thing of producing it ourselves, there was so much to actually get our heads around on that. The fact that, you know, we actually had to say, okay, this is when the song's working, this is when we have to move on. And for us, I mean, there's always been a producer there to actually say that and actually usher us down certain routes. And, but to actually do that ourselves, I think, you know, each one of us is a little freaked out by it, sort of, at points of having that kind of freedom. So, you know, for a year to actually learn all that, I think we've done pretty well, actually. And we did quite a bit of touring in the meantime.
Yes,
which
you did in between, which was interesting. I mean, was that just to try the songs out to an audience?
It was a bit of both. We had to go back to America. The record company wanted us to go back to America twice last year because the Bends was doing all right in America.
Yeah.
So we did our own tour and then we supported Alanis for about three or four weeks. But the opportunity is there to play new songs. In the Alanis States especially, we have 35, 40 minutes on stage. Half the set, you know, five out of the nine songs or whatever were new songs. And it's great, so we went straight back into the studio and we were already kind of, we were playing really well.
Yeah. And your choice of venue for recording the album was also sort of quite interesting. I mean, doing it at Hand Applause, which that was where you started it.
That's right.
And then you moved it over to Jane Seymour's house.
That's right.
Now that was interesting to me because, you know, why at that point did you move from your own place out?
The place that we've got is actually, it's brilliant for rehearsing it, but the facilities are a little spartan, to say the least. We decided we wanted to actually go somewhere where we're actually completely immersed in it, so, you know, that we could cut ourselves off, really, and just listen to ourselves.
Trouble was, Canada Applause wasn't residential, was it? So
no.
The sessions, well, it was the height of the summer.
If you're a farmer, remember?
Yeah, it's the height of the summer. Euro 96 is on. There's a lot of, you know, beautiful summer evenings. And we hadn't been at home for a summer for ages. So by about 10 in the evening, we were all kind of like, Paul Nigel was kind of like, right, guys, we're going to stay till 2, 3. And we're like, well, we were thinking of packing out today, right?
So we've done 2 hours today.
But the interesting, also thing about Canada Applause is that those sessions was that there was no stress whatsoever. Mm. It was incredibly easy. And it was very weird because that's the first time it'd been like that. And we didn't think that anything productive would come out of it. And it was only going on and doing, you know, more. When we went got to Jane Seymour's, we did more versions of No Surprises, which we ended up using the first take of the first day in Canada Applause, so our first day recording in our new studio environment. But we did like another four or five versions of No Surprises and actually came back and saw what was great about that sound and that time. So we actually did get, I mean, Subterranean was basically tracked there, Electioneering was basically tracked there.
Tourist
was basically tracked there. So 4 out of the 12 songs were in a month that we didn't think that working, where everyone was kind of, manana, you know, we were very...
Whatever, yeah. And if you sort of had to sort of take an average day, as I said, you took it quite easy, there wasn't any pressure to put something together, really, you know, in a certain time frame. What was an average day like, I mean, in the studio?
There's no such thing as an average day in the studio, unfortunately. You know, you've got five different people, well, six, including Nigel, who engineered it, and you've got all those different moods firing off against each other. So how you can ever predict what is going to happen within a day, it's impossible. I mean, you get to this situation where you can get about 2 or 3 days and you think, nothing's happening, and it can get a little depressing at points, and then suddenly everything will just click in on another day. And, you know, suddenly you get get rather cocky and think.
I like the analogy of a Wild West town. You know, some days it's real quiet, nothing's going on. Incorrect. And then on other days, everyone's firing at one another. There's like sniper fire from windows. And then the other days, you know, there's a wedding. It's all good. So it's, as you said, it's like anything can happen.
Yeah,
it's true. The only regular thing is grub, is feed times.
Yeah.
Which was amazing.
You looked forward to that, did you?
Yes, I think we all put about an extra stone on. It's sort of the heavyweight version of a Radiohead, and that's not talking in terms of our material.
And as I say, talking about Nigel Godrich, I mean, you've used him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's engineered for you in the past. In the most recent stuff. Yeah.
And
then he started to produce.
Yeah.
Why him again?
Well, because first of all, he's an excellent engineer. He's a brilliant engineer. He likes to work quickly as we do. And also, I mean, I think probably the main thing is probably personality as well, in the sense that he's 27, 28, our age or whatever. And it's really nice. It's a great feeling to have people who are your own age. There are six of you in the studio and you're actually doing it. I mean, it was great doing an album with John, and actually John Leckie actually sowed the seeds of this. He said, you can do what you want in the studio. You know, he demystified the whole process. And when he went away for 3 days to do some mixing during the bends, we did some recording with Nige, and it just felt so good, you know. It was a bit more hit and miss than John in those days. But by the time we were doing OK Computer, we'd done some stuff with Nige already. It felt really right. He's a real fan of the band, and we're a real fan of his. And
so you've sort of grown with the band, really?
Yeah.
Where your sound is
and
going.
The psychology of it is very important as well. It's very easy to get freaked out by like some kind of... You know, when John Leckie was first, the first 4 or 5 weeks in Rack were a nightmare. And that wasn't because of him, that was because of us, because there was John Leckie, this big producer, you know, huge number of albums that we loved that he'd done. And it's you know, you can't help but think all the time, like, God, he engineered the first George Harrison My Sweet Lord session, here I'm fucking up my guitar part, you know, what must he... There's all that kind of stuff, all that history in it. And of course, that's not what John's thinking, because, you know, producers don't do that.
Yeah.
Nige is just, you know, he's excellent as well. He's a great, great engineer.
So it was interesting, I mean, you worked with Paul Calderi as well, I mean, on Pepper.
Sean Slade, yeah.
Which was also an interesting one, I mean, because at that point you were, to all intents and purposes, a young band, a new band, and you were working with someone, with an American producer, which... To say, wasn't a typical thing at that point, I think, to do for a lot of British.
Yeah, I think at the time, I mean, if you look at the bands that we were listening to, it was, you know, bands like Sonic Youth and Pixies and Dinosaur Jr. And so, I mean, they were very much at the centre of that whole scene. So for us, it seemed like a fairly natural choice at the time. Again, we were quite in awe of them as well, and their pedigree.
True. I mean, early stage as well. And were you touring? I mean, you did the American dates with Alanis Morissette, so then you also did some dates in Holland and Belgium. It seems that your following there seems to be obviously pretty big as well. But was it actually a beneficial thing to tour? To tour during recording the album?
Yeah.
I mean, because it's sort of taking you away from that environment that you're sort of getting into, and then you're productive, and then all of a sudden you're away again. Was that good or bad?
It was actually really good for us. I mean, we needed to... I think when we work best is when we're actually stimulated and challenged. And there's a challenge for being out on the road and then suddenly coming back in and recording, which is what we did. Mm. Came back straight from an Alanis tour, and within 4 days we're in the studio. And we, in those first 3 days in the studio, against all the odds, we actually did so much stuff. I mean, we basically did the tracking for Climbing Up the Walls, Let Down, Karma Police. We did a lot in those, and these are like live takes as well. You know, what you hear on Climbing Up the Walls, most of it is, apart from the strings, most of it is, in fact, all of it is tracked live. I mean, it's everyone in a room playing together. So, yeah, it's really good for us to be able, we like that idea of being in the studio for a week and then, hey, let's go out and do a couple of shows.
And
see how people respond to the gig. Yeah. I mean, it's a bit of a nightmare logistically for our crew and stuff like that, because they're kind of like stood down for a week and then they're back on active duty. Yeah. But it's really good for us. It really works for us. Yeah. And I think it would be great to come to the, you know, you get to the stage where I think we would really respond to it well, that you forget all this nonsense about album, tour. That you could just tour an album and I'm sounding a bit like the Grateful Dead.
Carry on, Jerry. Yes.
But it would be because we get so much, you know, a lot of the creative stuff is actually done on the road, you know. Tom does a lot of his writing on the road as well.
Yes. Funny, because when you're actually on the road, that's the time when you get more time to yourself.
Yeah.
You can actually
concentrate
on
music.
Writing songs, sorting out your parts. Because, I mean, when you're at home, they're just, you know, 1,001 other things that will crowd in on you.
The bills,
yeah. It's also a really good way of actually seeing what songs do work and how they work. I mean, like, take Paranoid Android, for instance. Yeah. I mean, it's fairly lengthy in its current state.
It is what, yeah.
But when we were touring it, was about 10 minutes long, wasn't it?
Yeah, 10 minutes long.
Well, live it would work, wouldn't it? I mean,
it won't be 10 minutes tonight.
Because, I mean, that for a first single is, I mean, it's a brilliant song. I mean, you know, me and my biased way. but for a first single, I mean, come on, you know, I mean, you battled with radio.
But let's see, 20 years ago, that wouldn't, no one would have thought anything of it, would they? It's whether you're a music fan or whether you're a fan. I mean, I was talking to a radio station yesterday in Catalonia, and they were saying, they on the phone, they're going, this Paranoid Android song, it's a very, very long song. And I, you know, you have to turn around and say, well, you know, it depends whether you're a music fan or whether you cater for your advertisers, whether you do a radio station to get adverts and make money, or whether you actually, you know, obviously there's a fine line and there are commercial implications, but there's still room for a 6.5 minute single.
Yeah, will K-Rock turn around and go, oh great, we'll stick this on our playlist?
Probably not.
This is a problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, I mean, as you say, I mean, for the music fan, it's perfection, because that is the way the song should be.
But you see, what we're going to do is, anyway, in America, we're not releasing it to radio. It's going, because we've done a video, it's going exclusive to MTV, because there's no point going to, I mean, Radio 1 in England, they're playing it, they're hammering it to death.
Yeah, yeah.
And but K-Rock or whatever, radio stations wouldn't pick up. If it becomes like a, MTV, like, then of course they'll play it.
I thought they would, yeah.
Yeah. But it's, no, I mean.
Were you challenging the system in a way? I mean, maybe not obviously, but, you know, you're not,
I think we had to work with the songs that were on the album, really.
That's right. And it's the first song we played to our friends, you know.
So it's, you know, it's, as I said, you know, the reason why we played that song, first of all, was the fact that it seemed to actually draw people into the album as a whole. It seemed, because, you know, the sound's coming from a lot of diverse areas, really. And that's for one song in the album that actually encapsulates all of that, I think. So.
And then, I mean, the interesting thing is now that you're going to have 12 videos that you're going to make for this as well.
It's true.
Why? I mean, not that it's a bad thing, but was that sort of...
Do you mind? I'm actually just about all this. Can I? Sure, do.
What was the, so say, whose idea was it to do the 12 videos? Now, is that sort of an accompaniment to the album?
It was our video commissioner, Delia Parlophone. Mm. She, there was this whole thing which we decided, like, on the bends, to start taking videos a little bit more seriously and not necessarily butt in with our own ideas, go with directors and let them be creative and try and do something different, you know. Get away from the performance video, get away from this. So with the sort of the, I don't know, it got to a stage, it was like, how do you beat a video like Street Script? How do you beat a video like Just or fake plastic trees. You know, it's very difficult. So and Dilly said, well, let's turn it around. Let's just do a video for each song, keep them relatively low budget, and try and do it different. Use animators, and Paranoid Android is animated video with us barely in it. You know, one shot in a barn. There's a sort of figure called Robin. Yeah. Have you seen Robin?
I haven't. I must admit, I've read a lot about it because that's obviously, I mean, the naming of the album as well. I mean, and sort of the Paranoid Android, and to me, the link with the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe or type of thing. I mean, is there a theme, an obvious theme with the album? I mean, are you pushing for that or?
No, makes it sound a bit like a concept album.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. Well, this is, you know.
I think if a concept ever came into it, it would have been at the end when we were just trying to pull in like all these different elements of the album to actually make it make sense as you know the body of work. Then, but there wasn't something that we thought, okay, yes, let's really examine this whole idea of technology and music and technology and. And how it relates to us today. I mean, that really didn't come into it. I think, you know, of course, I mean, lyrically with Tom, I mean, is all the lyrics were written within a certain time frame. So, I mean, they are going to be links. I mean, you know, they're going to be crossover in his interests there. But to actually sit down and make a concept album would just be so incredibly tedious and just really limiting from a recording point of view.
And an obvious one, the title of the album,
Open Computer.
Yeah.
I think it kind of what's really interesting about it is I think it's a working title. It was the name of a song that was not a very good song. And that was never recorded, and it kind of lasted. There's that whole thing, you know. It can be taken anyway. There's a duality about it. It can be a positive force and a negative force. Okay, computer, you know, let's do this. I've harnessed the technology, or it's the downside of it. It's the HAL like 2001 kind of computers running the ship. You know, but it's lots of things. You know, we bought all this. We recorded this album basically with gear we bought, created a mobile setup, and we basically just, you know, we're surrounded by this technology. We didn't have a fucking clue how a lot of it worked, and part of the process was, you know, going in there being nervous, surrounded by all these toys, and kind of like, well, how does that, putting knobs and how does that work? And it's very liberating experience. It's kind of that whole thing, like when kids, you know, kids are supposed to be much better with computers than adults because they just like, they dive headfirst in and they don't care. And adults are like, oh, can't do that, might break it sort of thing. So there was a bit of that and a few things got broken. But it was fine.
And then
you'd have to buy different bits because you hadn't got the right bit and all that.
So you're techno junkies then. The camp.
It's interesting. I love the idea of technology and stuff. And you look through these magazines and they're great. And you go, oh, I want one of those. And you're almost always, when you get one of these things, say it can do this, this, and this, it always lets you down. You always feel like it's not as good as it could be because your brain kind of takes it on and reads this thing and goes, this is going to be problem solving the biggest thing that you've ever had or needed. And it's kind of a bit like that. So it's like working with computers. Mm-hmm. It's actually
computer games as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just like if you went back to something like Space Invaders, which at the time just, wow, the graphics on this are amazing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course there's like a real passion again for it now, but in terms of graphically speaking, it just looks really limited.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just such a quick turnover in technology.
I mean, obviously that's gonna affect your recording because you've got all this technology coming in. But I mean, a lot of the stuff that you intended to use, you never landed up using and landed up just putting it through your traditional pedals and things like that.
It's because we get bored very, very, very easily, and we want things instantly. One of the things, it didn't work out like that, but one of the things we want to do is work quickly. And if you've got a computer and you've got to set up click tracks, you've got to set up sound and stuff, it takes a long time. And we did it with Airbag, and that was good. But after 2 days of you and Tom doing that, and it was a great, great thing that you did. I'm not doing that. I'm not dissing it at all, because it had to be done.
Just carry on. No, carry on.
But it gets, you know, if we've
done
that.
What you said at the time.
If we'd done that with every single track, you know, 24 days, and that's what it would, you know, yeah. would have taken, because, you know, we're not fast workers. It would have been so, whereas, you know, climbing up the walls, you do that within 5 minutes or whatever, you get a sound going, you're all playing, and it's instant, you've got something to, you can work to, and something you can be really motivated and get a vibe off, really.
And what did you retain from the first two albums and landed up incorporating on the new album, and what was new, things that maybe you hadn't done before? Did you sort of go back and have a look at the last two albums and say, okay, well, no. We liked that, we didn't like that.
No.
Let's take, you know...
I think when we started off, and it's not as if we took the, you know, Radiohead blueprint and ripped it up and said, let's recreate ourselves. I mean, there's a real sense of a development there. I mean, you can actually see the thread from, say, like, Drilling Pete straight up to OK Computer, and I think you can still tell it's the same band there. To take a song like Lucky, I mean, I think that's a very good kind of midpoint song between the Bends and OK Computer.
Lucky was a watershed song, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In terms of Tom's writing and when
and
we
that
did
does
it.
Appear on the album.
It is on the album.
Is it on the album?
Yeah.
Great.
Track 11.
That's right. I mean, in terms of recording, that fell midway between the two albums anyway. But you know, that still sounds very close to the Bends.
Mm.
But I mean, the way we approached that was the first thing that we could actually produce ourselves, and in a way that gave us like the direction for OK Computer, I think.
Are you sort of aware of your sound, that there is a Radiohead sound?
Well, I think we're aware of there definitely was a Radiohead sound on the first two albums, and it was something to get away from. You know, I mean, one of the things that I think about OK Computer that a lot of us liked in the band was that we felt that a lot of it didn't sound like Radiohead. But then, you know, you can't. But then, as a band, you can't really be objective about these things, and of course, be. You know, you don't want to sound like a different band each album. And it's not possible to anyway. I mean, unless you were a completely proficient musician and Tom was able to sing in different styles all the time. I think what's interesting about bands is the progression or the development, or the see how album changes from album to album.
And where would you say you are now as far as that progression is? I mean, is there... sort of, are you at sort of a pinnacle point, or are you still sort of taking on board and buying all things?
We're still taking on board. I mean, I think that after we came out of doing OK Computer, once we finished the album, we felt like we were just drained of any new ideas. It's like, you know, we've done all we possibly could on this album. It was like, we've sweated over it. We were just, you know, completely emotionally and musically drained, and that's why going out onto the road, going out to tour and just playing, trying to relearn these songs and play these songs again and just playing as a band. Maybe in hindsight we'll be able to see where we are, but at the moment it's very difficult.
It feels very shaky again, because we haven't played since last August.
Yes.
So. You know, you get to the end of an album and it all sounds quite polished and all quite in control, and then suddenly you get it back into the life situation. You think,
oh no.
Oh my God. Brothers.
The choice to produce yourselves, I mean, as you said, it is difficult to be objective as a band. I mean, bands obviously do it, but has it been a good thing? To produce yourselves.
It was the natural thing to do. It was with someone like Nigel.
Yeah.
It was because it's another discipline. It was learning. You know, the whole great thing about having a producer. We John Leckie and the way that John Leckie was and the way that Sean Slade and Paul Caldery were, they weren't arrangers. You know, we'd have done all the arranging, we'd done all the music. What they were is they were timekeepers, they were kind of disciplinarians.
Which you really do,
and we had to learn all of that. So it was definitely the right thing. It was the first time we could actually probably take on board and do that. And it's all right doing it for two or three days, but whole chunks of time.
I just wanted to introduce you to Colin.
I heard about that. Because I must admit your internet following and is rather large. I recently joined the group just to see what people were asking and to say the interest among. I mean, you did the interview with the Irish Radio a couple of weeks ago.
I don't know. I can't remember.
You did. Johnny did. And to say, because you seem to. I mean. Going back to Barcelona, why did you choose to start everything in Barcelona, do two shows, and then have a break? Why? Yeah.
I think we're this have a look around you.
Yes.
Not a difficult one.
No, but that's the obvious.
I think we knew that we'd actually be quite nervous about this week. You know, it's the first time that people will have heard of playing this new material live, well, in its form as it is now. And so I think we wanted to come somewhere that we could relax as much as possible. Barcelona's always seemed to have that effect on us.
And also, hopefully, everybody who's come to see us would relax here as well.
Yeah. Okay, and you were said to be given free rein. With this album by EMI, does that sort of mean that the first two you had someone sort of knocking on the door?
We were left alone. I think our A&R man came down once or twice. Just he was on his way down to see his family, so he's passing through. So he popped in.
Yeah.
Our managers, we'd ask them for advice halfway through, and they'd say, look, you know, it's your record. You finish it. And then, you know, you finish tracking, and you think you finish tracking, then come to us and see. So we were left entirely to our own devices. And yes. And, you know, having to plan things, you know, no one's saying at Christmas time, by Christmas time, we had to focus on, you know, 14 tracks. So we didn't have anyone putting any pressure saying, when's, they just said, if you want a release before the summer, you have to have it mixed and finished by mid-March. And we're like, it's time to get
our skates on.
Yeah, get cracking.
Yeah. And
it's Christmas.
I mean, the EMI also seems to be pretty optimistic about the album.
And despite the fact they've heard it, I know. Sorry.
Why do you think that is? Because it seems almost that this is the, I mean, okay, all the comparisons that you have made, and everything else, but this seems to be the big commercial album. Would you sort of agree or not?
Well, I think a lot of people are saying once they've heard the record, it's gone from commercial suicide, which we didn't really respond very well to, because we didn't think it was that extreme.
Yeah.
To it takes a couple of listens. It does take a couple of listens. Anything, if you do anything different, it's going to take.
Albums,
what?
A new paper album.
You anything that you listen to, anything that's different, it takes you a couple of listens to get into.
It's almost a sign to say that to me says an album that's got longevity. It's
absolutely
been, it's got all the elements, because if you just fall into it, then it's within a week you've lost it.
Yeah.
And if you have to sign the album up as a whole
finished.
God. It's that one word, really.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to ask you one last favour, if I may. I'm going to ask you to do two IDs for me. One for my show, and then one for the sort of national broadcaster, which is 5 FM. So you can play with it as you will.
The best radio voice.
So, what's your full name? Jason?
Jason Curtis.
Jason Curtis, yeah. On 5FM?
No, I'm not on 5FM. You can do the one just 5FM straight. And
okay.
I do a show, as I say, called Cutting Edge. Very cliche, but it's the name of the show, all right? So, deal with it. Okay, so when you're ready.
Do you want to just say one?
You do it all together. In unison.
Hello, this is Ed from Radiohead.
This is Phil.
And this is Colin.
And you're listening to Jason Curtis on The Cutting Edge.
Thank you. And thanks. Then we can just do the one for 5FM.
Hi, this is Phil from Radiohead.
Hi, this is Colin from Radiohead.
And this is Ed from Radiohead.
And this is Radiohead on 5FM.
Excellent. Thank you, gentlemen. Okay. Appreciate your time.
Oh, mate.
Yeah, thanks, Jason.
That was not too bad.
That was great.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
It's cool.